Well, hello once again, faithful listener. Welcome to the Small Voice podcast for August. My name is Darren, and joining me in the studio are Anne.
Hello.
And Holly.
Hello.
We're all fresh from our summer holidays and raring to go with another round of musings on matters moral, ethical, and spiritual. This month, we're bringing you a slimmed down podcast, an amuse-bouche, an antipasto, perhaps even a prawn cocktail. No, wait, Anne and Holly are veggie, so let's say some hummus and falafel in audible podcast form. Or even audible podcast form. You know it makes sense. Now, before we get into the podcast proper, you might hear a slightly different sound quality in the podcast this month, and I should explain that for this Small Voice 59th program, we are somewhere different. Hitherto, we have recorded, as you know, in Small Voice Mansions, which was a glorious purpose-built building in the centre of Glasgow. But we're no longer there. We actually left our studios as part of GRF Christian Radio. We had been there for, I've forgotten, what was it?
46
years.
46 years. At least, Dad, some of us have not been there for
46 years. It just feels like it. But we're not there anymore, and we'll reveal later on where we are now. We're not in the street, I assure you. But we had to kind of go through a whole process of kind of upping sticks and leaving, and that I'm going to make the subject of our heaven and hell this month, you know, or 2 months. So, Anne, how has the process been for you?
It's hard to know, Darren, at this point. I think the answer is it's still too early to tell. Certainly the removing of equipment down a steep flight of stone stairs to put into storage was not heaven. I think I did my back in a couple of times.
And who knew that you could destroy filing cabinets so effectively with a hammer? Not you personally, but
yes.
Other people.
Yeah. I've still got the ringing in my ears.
So you're not yet sure?
I'm not yet sure. I mean, I'm quite enjoying the journey.
Yeah.
It is an emotional time to leave a place where you've been for such a long time and where it feels like part of you almost.
Yeah.
If you think that we spend so much of our lives or have spent so much of our lives there.
Yeah.
But at the same time, this is all very exciting. So,
and
it's good.
You know, the art of the radio is being personal. Can I ask, did you cry?
No, I didn't cry. Does that surprise you? Because I'm the one who always cries.
Yeah, okay. Holly, what about you?
I didn't cry. I thought I was going to. That was probably surprised me more than anything else. So the last night that we had in the studios also happened to be my last day at my previous job. So I had a lot of change at once, and I don't like change. And so I thought I was going to have a harder time with it than I have done. And actually, I'm like Anne said, I'm getting quite excited about what the future holds for us. And I think actually sometimes it's good to have a change and to rethink and to try and plot what direction we're going to take next, and I'm excited.
Yeah. I'll confess to sneaking into rooms that were empty and kind of trying to kind of soak up the vibe a little bit, you know.
I have to say I did that too.
I mean, I have to say, you know, it was not a high-end building, let's be honest. It
had a particular smell.
It was home, you know, but it was when we were taking out all the furniture. It was great that people were willing to take our furniture. It was astonishing that people were willing to take our furniture in some ways. I think like you and Holly, I think there's a sense, maybe there's a sense as which, without being really cliched, it was always about the people rather than the building, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So kind of onwards. And our listeners will be desperate to know, where are we right now? So I can reveal we are still in Glasgow. I did try and bid for Edinburgh, but not much chance there. We are actually very grateful to the good people of the Scottish Episcopal Church, specifically the Diocese of Glasgow and Galloway, who've given us some space in which to record this podcast. We are, in fact, recording this in an office above an Italian restaurant, which, oddly enough, is no different from the past 20 years or so. Plus a change, as the Italians really don't say. This month, we are devoting the podcast entirely to our media review, where we'll be discussing the new autobiography by Vicky Beeching, which is titled Undivided, Coming Out, Becoming Whole and Living Free from Shame. Vicky made her name as a singer and songwriter specialising in worship songs, which proved very popular in evangelical circles, particularly in the United States. Since coming out as gay, Vicky has had to give up her music career, and she now works as a writer, broadcaster and campaigner for equality. The book tells the story of how she gradually discovered that it was actually okay to be a Christian and a lesbian, and also of how she came to terms with the backlash which inevitably followed from some Christians who saw her as being on the road to hell. Now, before we discuss the book, Holly, you're going to read an extract which I think is from a point where she's struggling to kind of find out what the Bible really says about these things. Would that be right?
I think that's fair enough. So we start with Vicky after she has come back from America, and she's exploring the her thoughts about sexuality and faith.
Okay.
When I'd considered a good place to go and read theology books about faith and sexuality, the Brompton Oratory instantly came to mind. I didn't want a library. I wanted a place of prayer and worship as my venue. At the oratory, prayers had soaked into the stones for decades. The building was always open, and there was rarely anyone in there between the lunchtime mass and the evening service. It seemed ideal. I arrived my first afternoon of reading with a backpack of books. It felt good to be out in London and around other people after so much time at home during my breakdown. A couple of hours passed quickly as I pored over books and took notes. Heavy, sonorous bells chimed, and the whole building echoed. Hearing them, I paused and prayed. Faith was still the heartbeat of my life. God was still the centre of everything, as he had been since I was 4, when I walked around the schoolyard telling him about my thoughts and feelings. Day after day, I returned to the oratory to read. A jumble of emotions surfaced as I studied and took notes. Fear of what I'd do if I concluded that God did not approve of gay relationships. And also fear of what I'd do if I concluded he did. Both pathways sounded immensely challenging in different ways. At the end of each day of studying, I attended evening mass, then sat in quiet for half an hour of silent prayer. I invited God to speak in the quiet, to direct my conscience, to help me understand what I'd been reading and to guide me towards the right conclusion, whatever it might be.
Okay, thanks. So we're going to review the book. We're also, I think we will have to then talk a bit about the kind of reaction to the book, because there's been strong reactions in a lot of different ways, and Vicky is actually was to be found on British TV this week on The One Show. You know you've arrived when you're on The One Show. But let's start with the book itself, and may have been resonances for you or not, Holly. What did you think?
So I suppose it's difficult for me to speak about the book without explaining my personal journey. So I became a Christian when I was 14, and at that stage of my life, Vicky Beeching was 23, and she was just moving to America to start her music career in Christian music. And at that, her time as a well-known worship leader also coincided with the early days of my faith. And I went to sort of a normal-ish church, but also had, for Northern Ireland, so I was in quite a conservative Presbyterian church. But at that time, my faith was also very heavily influenced by a sort of American evangelical subculture. So I was went to big praise and worship gatherings with thousands of other young people, went to festivals that are very similar to festivals that Vicky describes in the book, had very similar experiences with being prayed for that Vicky describes, and was at that time struggling with a realization that I was gay. And then at that point, our lives diverged completely. So Vicky moved to America and had this total, you know, she continued to have that worship leader life, and she had quite a big influence on me as a young person. And then I moved away for university, and I came out, and I started a relationship with a woman. I got married when I was 24, very sort of happy and settled and out. And that isn't the experience that Vicky Beeching had. So the next I became aware of Vicky Beeching was when she'd moved back from the States and she started saying things on her blog and started to be a sort of Christian commentator. I was like, oh, this is interesting. Vicky Beeching seems to be okay with gay marriage. That's really interesting. And it's just not something that you ever expect to hear. And I was like, oh, that sort of piqued my interest. And I was looking at her blog and followed her on Twitter. And that was really... It was just an interesting, my old life colliding with the life that I was having in my mid-20s. And then when Vicky Beeching came out, I had a very strong personal reaction to that. It was, it really meant a lot to me that it was like someone else had come with me on some sort of journey. Mm. Like I thought I'd been the only person who'd done that, even though I know I'm not. But it was like someone else had joined me on some sort of, out on a limb somewhere, and that that meant a lot. And
I mean, I can't confess to any expertise here. She would be a kind of not unique, but there wouldn't have been many high profile gay lesbian Christians coming out.
I suppose there was one before her, who was called Jennifer Knapp. So Jennifer was a big name in the Christian music scene. She was nominated for a Grammy, and in 2002 she disappeared off the face of the planet and resurfaced 8 years later and had been living secretly in Australia with her girlfriend and came out at that point. But there was a big gap between her having her commercial success and coming out. So she was probably the only one. And Vicky talks about her in the book and almost her being used as a threat against her, that, you know, if, you know, oh, the same thing will happen to you has happened to Jennifer Knapp. And so I was very heavily influenced by the things that Vicky describes in the book, and it meant a lot to me when she came out. And I went and I bought the paper. I remember going and buying The Independent and poring over it and being really, in a way that I couldn't really quite describe, I felt like it was really important. Even though I was several years post coming out, felt very settled, there was something about that particular person coming out that meant a lot to me. So coming to the book, I was really looking forward to reading it. I read it quite a while ago for the first time. Actually, I read it when it just came out. And I'm interested to hear what you two thought of it, because for me, it was always going to be a book I read. And I'm not sure whether it's a book that either of you would have picked up if it wasn't for reviewing it for the podcast, because I, for me, there's something of my story and Vicky's story, and I felt like that was important to read it. So... And maybe I'll let you speak first, right, and then I can.
Yeah, right. Sure.
I have a lot to say, so I feel like I should let someone else talk.
And you're up next.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know Vicky's music, so, you know, unlike Holly, I didn't have any kind of prior knowledge of her work as a Christian artist. But I guess when I realised that she was a songwriter whose songs had really a major impact on people. I mean, I guess. An amazing thing to think that something that you've written has helped maybe millions of people to encounter God. That's a wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. So I came to the book with really high expectations, thinking, you know, this is a book that's been written by a wordsmith. Mm-hmm. But actually, it's not a particularly well-written book. I don't think maybe prose is Vicky's gift. But actually, that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter in the slightest. And the reason it doesn't matter is contained in the dedication to the book. And if it's all right, I'm just going to read the dedication.
Sure.
It says, "This book is dedicated to the memory of Lizzie Lowe, a 14-year-old British girl who tragically took her own life in 2014 because she feared telling her Christian community that she was gay. Research statistics show that lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender young people are far more likely to self-harm, suffer from mental health issues and contemplate suicide than their heterosexual peers. If for no other reason than that one teenager currently growing up within the evangelical churches reads this book and understands that it is possible to be an utterly committed Christian and gay, then that's what it's been all about." And somehow she has, by default, not by choice, that's for sure, had to incarnate that for a whole generation of young people.
Yeah, and there's no doubt, I think, from reactions to the book, and I think even within the book itself, she writes about the reaction that you spoke about, Holly, in terms of people getting in touch and saying, I read your interview and it gave me the courage to come out to my parents." So, I mean, that's from a newspaper interview, and I know that the book has already had that kind of similar impact. I think it's written in a very kind of, I won't say light, because it is quite an earnest book, I guess. I guess he's fairly earnest, why wouldn't you be? But it's certainly accessible. I found it fascinating, actually, for the picture that she gives of that American subculture. Not that it feels like a subculture in America, because it's subculture here actually, but in America it's just big business, and you know, people are quite upfront about being, you know, going to church and going to mega churches. And I'll confess that I kind of thought, well, she had it made as a worship leader, it must have been a pretty good lifestyle. Blimey, it's not. you read the book and you realise that basically, unfortunately for her, she made it big in the music world at the precise point where you really can't make much money out of the music world because of digital downloads and piracy and such like. So she gets thrown hither and yon all over the States where you don't know what time zone you're in. And actually, I mean, maybe that was part of the cause, but also I'm sure kind of her angst. You know, she's not had much luck with her health, you know, and that comes through kind of loud and strong in the book. Though maybe in itself that is of help to others going through the same sort of thing.
I think what struck me, and again, this is more, I suppose, about Vicky's story rather than necessarily the prose of the book, is that she just didn't get to have a home in her 20s. And after she left university, I think the last time in the book before that she seems like she has a sense of belonging somewhere is at university. And even then, it's an Oxford University experience, which is very artificial. She's essentially cloistered in a college, doesn't really interact that much with the outside world. And then she enters this phase of life that makes it sound like a political campaign. Like she just turned up and gave her stump speech at a different megachurch and then got back in the bus and just didn't...
Stump chorus.
Absolutely. Yeah. And ate pizza with Delirious and had a really strange existence where she didn't really have anywhere or anyone to call her own. And I think that experience... is probably exacerbated by her internal turmoil, but that cannot be a healthy experience for any very young person to have. And I think when I'm reading it, I'm struck by how painfully young she was whenever all of that started. And I think about myself at that age, and I was only just getting to know who I was, and I was in a really safe environment to explore those things, and I was in a relationship with another woman at that time, and I was very with the same woman that I'm now in a relationship with. I've not been like hiding women. I had a really safe group of friends and family and a church community and other Christians within my sphere with which to test the boundaries and explore and have a normal experience of being in my 20s. I think it's quite a normal experience, and we describe it a lot within gay circles that I didn't date whenever I was in my teens, or I did a bit, but not with people I was particularly interested in. It's quite normal to not have a normal adolescent experience and not sort of sneak out and, you know, go out with boys and have that normal, nice, safe adolescent experience. And then when that comes to you in your 30s, that comes with a decades of baggage that
really
you wouldn't
does.
Have had when you had
yeah.
it in and actually you don't know how to date. Like she's describing
yeah.
being in her 30s and not knowing how to go out for dinner with somebody, and that's
or even be intimate with someone,
yeah,
let's
absolutely.
Be honest, because there's a huge voice in the back of your head telling you that this is wrong
yeah.
and you shouldn't be doing this.
I think it's yeah. helpful that she draws parallels with the rest of, I suppose, just the purity movement in general within evangelical culture, that it actually, some of those things would have been the case whether she was gay or straight. There is just a really unhealthy relationship with sex in general. There is sex is horrible and dirty, save it for someone you love, attitude to sexuality. That, of course, that damages people. Like it's just empirically, you can empirically it damages people.
Yeah. I mean, if we move on now to the reaction to the book, and I think Vicky writes about coming out and being aware of the time, I think it was 10 o'clock in the evening, when the newspaper story was going to go live on the website, and she was watching her Twitter feed because she has a big following, and she was waiting for the reaction. And of course she got some encouragement, you know, it may even be a lot of encouragement, but I think she also got a lot of vitriol and a lot of hatred from people who would be, and I'm doing air quotes here, Christians or evangelical Christians.
And if you want to see what that's like, you can search Vicky Beeching in the search bar on Twitter, look at latest tweets, and see the hundreds of tweets that she still gets a day from people who are vitriolic, awful things, and nice little stories in the middle. But actually people are still, years down the line, giving her a really hard time on social media. And I mean, interested in what you say about her sitting, waiting to sort of press refresh on it, because she was pressing refresh on opening Pandora's box of awful comments.
But she was also pressing refresh on the end of her career. Because that's what's true. Happened since then is that a lot of churches have said, we're not playing your songs. Now, she would get, it might be tuppence, but she would get money, you know, through copyright or whatever, for her songs being used in worship. And, you know, it's quite amazing to think, no, you know, whatever, however happy I might have felt singing that song last week, and I know that the author is gay, therefore I can no longer sing that song.
It's a bizarre reaction, and I don't understand it. And I don't even understand why anyone would want to deliberately hurt another human being, whether you think that person's let you down or not. I assume the basis of their comments are that they feel somehow let down. But I have no understanding, can't even begin to identify what it would be in a Christian who claims to be a follower of Jesus that would set out to deliberately hurt another person. So I am baffled by this.
She does give an extreme example in the book of being picketed by Westboro Baptist, which is which is an experience that few of us get to have in our lives.
Which she handled pretty well, actually, I think, in the circumstances. But that must be continuing to damage her, and I think that's the concern, that she now isn't just, well, she never was just herself, both in the past when she was really at the heart of the evangelical church, and now, as a gay Christian, she is standing for so much more. She is representing some other great body of people in both states, and that's not good for anybody.
She's in an absolutely unenviable position, and I think the other thing that struck me, and something that I think a lot of our listeners probably will have seen, is there's a stand-up special on Netflix that's sort of blown up over the last couple of months called Nanette, by the comedian Hannah Gadsby. And Hannah talks about not being able to tell jokes anymore about her own life, because if you tell a joke about your own life, you freeze that experience that you've had at the point of tension, because that's where the humour comes. Mm-hmm. And if you've had negative life experience, the point of tension is also the point of trauma. So to enable herself to keep telling jokes about her life, she has to retell traumatising stories again and again. And then if I look at what Vicky Beeching is doing in the media now, talking about gay conversion therapy and mental health stuff and repeatedly telling her coming out story, in some ways in the book she describes that as being somewhat of a cathartic experience, but she talks about having one of these horribly constructed TV debates where they pretend there's two sides to a human rights argument. Where she talks
and
about
the person just to speak to is a pretty extreme case.
She was speaking to someone who'd worked with the Ugandan government to impose the death penalty on gay people, and he was giving her this, oh no, but I don't believe that gay people exist. This is the devil in you, on TV, like on live television, with she'd no warning.
Channel 4.
She didn't know who she was going to be speaking to.
Channel 4 News were astonished.
And that cannot be good. I didn't have that. I came out and I ran away. I lost a lot of friends, and I'm not going to say that it wasn't really difficult. It was horrible, and there's people who don't speak to me anymore, and I've had breakdowns in relationships with parts of my family, and that was really difficult. But I'm also able to say, to quote a worship song, I will fear no evil because my God is with me, and if my God is with me, who then shall I fear? I believe that I am on the side of the good and the right and the Holy Spirit. And that means that actually I'm able to say, well, actually those people are, they need to change. I don't need to change to suit their way of being. They need to evolve. And that puts me in a really privileged position. And I got to come there to this view through 10 years of having a really nice, supportive life. And I hope that Vicky has people around her that will love her and support her as much as I've been loved and supported, so that she can get to a point where she can say, I truly believe that God loves me.
Vicky doesn't try and find the kind of the pithy happy ending. Mm-hmm. You know, she's brutally honest about her own health condition. Yeah. You know, and it's and that's quite a, you know, she's kind of got ME and has to, you know, gauge her strength, yeah, throughout the week to meet all the commitments, although she says that she's never missed a media commitment or anything like that, and that's good for her. I wonder if, I thought that she's very generous to the evangelical church still, I think. Would you agree, or do you think?
I think she could have been part of it.
Okay, maybe that's it.
I guess the kind of...
And can maybe, she be, or do you think...
Well, she acknowledges, I mean, she at least acknowledges in the book that this is essentially to do with the Bible. It's about how you read the Bible. Mm-hmm. And she addresses head on, and I think very cogently, the kind of key passages that people who would be writing the vitriol to her,
I think her theology degree really did stand her in good stead.
Absolutely.
To have the explorations that she's had.
Absolutely. So we deal with the Old Testament passages, like about Sodom and Gomorrah, and we deal with Paul's statements, and we deal with Acts chapter 10, all of that stuff, which really takes the Bible seriously and responds, mm-hmm, to that kind of attitude towards homosexuality. But whether it will be compelling enough for these folk to go through the sort of paradigm change that she's clearly gone through, I don't know.
I do get the sense that she's a bit like me, in that she's quite not in a bad way, but she's quite externally motivated. So she doesn't necessarily want change for her. She wants change for the entire church. And she knows that something is deeply true, so she needs everyone else to know that too. And I think maybe she's got it and I haven't. Maybe me going, well, I'm never going to change their minds, I'm just going to go and have my happy life. Maybe that's me chickening out.
You just go to a liberal church where you're all headed to hell. I mean, that's...
Oh, absolutely. I think I go to a selection of liberal churches where we're all headed to hell.
And every one of them, hellbound.
So I'm going there with some lovely people.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I absolutely applaud Vicky for her stance and her bravery in the public eye. I think what we're saying here is that this is a book that it's however painful to get out there, and however painful an experience it might be for some people to read it, it's important. I did notice in her introduction, she really is trying to reach out, and she says, you know, if you've picked this book up and you think that gays are all going to hell, she doesn't quite say that, but you know,
please
she says, please keep reading. And I think, you know, that's a really laudable aim. Whether or not anyone will get beyond, you know, the front cover, a subtitle that makes it quite clear that she's gay, I don't know, but you know, it's got to be worth a punt. So, Undivided is, as we've been saying, written by Vicky Beeching. It's published by William Collins and is available in hardback and ebook formats. And as I say, you can also catch Vicky on social media, and you can catch her on The One Show this week, I think. So that should be on the iPlayer,
on
BBC iPlayer. And so, dear listener, that is your lot. If you've enjoyed our Slim Down podcast this month, then why not get in touch to let us know? As ever, you can comment on our website smallvoice.org.uk or tweet us at small_voice1. We'll be back next month as we continue to explore new formats, new possibilities, new life, new civilizations. No, no, wait, hang on, that's Star Trek. Well, what the heck? Who says we can't boldly go where no podcast has gone before?